Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.
What's good, internet? It is Friday, May 4th, and you are listening to a very hot and sweaty Waypoint Radio, episode 153. I know what you're thinking. There have been like 7 podcasts in your feed between the last numbered episode and this one. Well, it's been a minute, and so we wanted to wrap back around and make sure we have a real episode. Joining me today, Danielle Riendo.
Hi, it's really hot, but it's better than winter.
Okay, well, I'm glad you're on brand. Patrick Klepek.
So the other one's fake podcasts? Fake podcasts!
Fake podcasts.
That doesn't quite roll off the tongue nearly as well.
No, fake pods, maybe?
Fake
maybe
pods. That's all right. Fake pods.
Not fake, but like we did all those bonus pods. We did a lot of article reads. We've done a lot of, we did an interview. We did some other stuff in there. Review of a spoiler cast. Lots of bonus stuff. Lots of kind of, I like to think of it as alternative podcasting, you know? And we haven't done like a alt pod, and because of the way things shook out, we've done lots of like super focused like here's a talk about this one game, here's a talk about this one issue, here's an interview, and not much in terms of just like, hey, let's catch up and how we've been playing. So while Norm, how we playing
how we playing,
damn.
welcome to the new segment on Waypoint Radio called How We Playing. We haven't done the kind of just like catch up Monday style episode. So even though it's Friday, Danielle has graciously offered me the host chair today to do my traditional Monday pod. And the most important thing is it's too hot in New York City. And I hope that the weather wizard shows up.
Is it hot or humid?
Both.
It's both. New York just gets both. We don't really get that dry heat ever. Not really.
It was very humid earlier this week. And then we had 36 hours of like intense storms. Which broke the humidity, and now it's just like pleasant and warm.
There's a chance it'll storm later tonight, and then it looks like it's definitely going to storm on Sunday, which will help. But it was like 90 degrees yesterday, and like that's a hard swing from where we were before.
It was like 44 a couple of days ago, and like before the 90. So it's been a lot.
And it'll be in the 40s again all by like Monday or Tuesday. Oh, you know what I mean? Like, I think it's going to even out around the 60s, which is great. 60, 70. I'll live that all day.
You know? Yes.
I think that Danielle, you and I can find a happy medium. We can meet in the center, you know?
That's good running weather.
Tell me more.
Weather centrism is what I'm here to advocate.
I think most people are for weather centrism, which is like 72.
Yeah.
I do like seasons. I hate being hot. I hate it because there's a point at which I can't get cooler. Do you know what I mean? Like, I think I've been through this, like, yeah, but even then it can be hot. I've been in hot pools before.
Those are called spas?
Oh.
Hot tubs.
You know what I mean? Like, there's a point at which you can't get cooler by taking more clothes off or by, you know what I mean? Like, oh, it is still fucking stifling or the humidity is still bad. Whereas for me in the winter, I can just keep piling on covers, baby. I can just get under another comforter. I can put on more pajamas. I'll put on extra long underwear, not just regular long underwear.
How many pajamas
here, Austin? It gets in the cracks. There's like no actual foolproof for cold. Like it gets, unless you have like a sealed spacesuit. Like, it gets
extra long PJs. That's what I wear, a sealed spacesuit. I get, but in any case, I'm happy to meet you in the middle here, Danielle, and say nice 67, 70 degree, even 75 degree day, you know?
Yeah.
I also like the fall a lot. I really like the seasons. And so I could never move to a place where it is just 70 degrees every day, I don't think. I think I like
you
the
think
changes
that,
too
and
much.
Then you do get over it. As someone that did this life, the Midwest to the West Coast to back to the Midwest, like, you do, I mean, what you end up doing is what I did is like, you end up being the person who used to go to Walmart and be like, who the hell buys a CD with thunderstorm noises on it? And then you do, and you buy one of those and listen to it when it's like the 800th day in a row where it's like beautiful in San Francisco.
Yeah. Love the rain too much. I really do. I'd end up doing the same thing. So besides the trying to tackle the weather and figure out like what clothes to wear on any specific day because it's constantly trying to play tricks on us, what have y'all been up to? What have you been playing?
I know Patrick and I have both played a game I actually reviewed today, and it has to do with weather and extreme weather. It sure does. Like, it's actually all about a beautiful tropical place that has been frozen over by assholes.
So this is like literally, this is the fight that we're having.
Exactly.
What game is this?
You have to fight to get your beautiful weather back. It's called Donkey Kong Country Tropical Freeze. And I definitely want to hear some of Patrick's thoughts, because I think my thoughts on the subject are well documented. sort of other than the fact, I guess, if you hadn't heard, I think it's a fantastic game. I think it's a really wonderful 2D platformer that does come from a series that people don't necessarily have, you know, the highest respect for. But I think the two games that Retro Studios have made, which is Donkey Kong Country Returns and this, and especially this, are incredibly well-designed 2D platformers that sort of take the spirit of the older games, but with really genuinely, I think, incredible level design and really, really good iterative design, which means, you know, you're introduced to an element early on in a level and constantly throughout a level, it sort of adds to that element, it sort of iterates on it, it twists on it, and it makes it more exciting, more challenging, more fun as it kind of goes.
I think, or I'm just going to put this out here, as someone who doesn't necessarily, I haven't played these games, so I can't, I played the original Donkey Kong Country on the SNES.
Good game.
I haven't played, I believe
you.
It is
a good game.
I didn't like it. And what I'll say is, as a loud person who speaks a lot, I think there are a handful of loud people like me who do not like the Donkey Kong Country or Donkey Kong Country Returns or Donkey Kong Country Tropical Freeze, but that those games have an audience and are pretty well respected, right? Like, they reviewed well. Both of those got, like, in the 80s
overall.
The
Donkey Kong Country games were fucking huge at the time. Like,
yeah, there were, like, three of them.
Like, those games came at the tail end of, like, the SNES when the N64 was, like, being perpetually delayed into oblivion when it was the Ultra 64, and the PlayStation had already arrived, I believe, by the time Donkey Kong Country hit shelves. It was, like, very close. Like, the overlap is, like, you think there was the jump from 2D to 3D, and, like, actually, like, the overlap was a lot longer than you think. And, right. And especially the music, like, the original Donkey Kong Country. Like, I remember in elementary school, I would be the person who, like, in our art class, you could bring in a CD for the class to listen to. And I brought in the Donkey Kong Country soundtrack. People were like, this is, like, surprisingly relaxing and good. And people were asking what it was at the end of class. Like, it's the soundtrack to a video game.
I have a question.
They were less interested when they found out.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. And the music was incredible in those games. And I think those games are fantastic as well.
The first two. The third one was long in the tooth. I don't know if I'd call it bad, but by the third one, I was ready to move on.
Yeah, I mean, I love the third one. I'll defend it, but it's okay. Like, I understand. I get it.
I have a question, I have such an outsider's perspective here. People know, or probably know, that I'm not, like, the biggest platformer fan, and that's a me thing, I don't think that platformers are bad as a genre or something. It's in line with a lot of the conversation we just had with Fortnite in terms of, like, what appeals to me about games and blah, blah, blah. But I am someone who grew up playing lots of 2D platformers. Like, I grew up playing all the Mario games in 2D, playing them on Game Boy, playing them on the NES, on the SNES, playing all of the 2D Sonic games except for, like, the 32X Knuckles one. playing, you know, renting Bubsy and renting...
Yay!
Okay. and renting other, you know, other 2D platformers of the Arrow the Acrobat, stuff like that.
Okay.
And I'm curious, like, what makes the Donkey Kong Country series, both from its original SNES days, and where it is now with Returns and Tropical Freeze, like, what makes it distinct? Is it more of a, in the spectrum between Mario and Sonic, where is it? What's distinct about it? Or does that spectrum not even make sense in terms of kind of conditioning or categorizing platformers?
It does, because I think, like, the Mario games are very, very different in style, right? The way your jump is very, very precise. It's much more about very precise movement, whereas the Donkey Kong Country games on the SNES were less precise. They were much more about momentum and kind of going fast, not Sonic fast. This is a very important distinction. There's a very different sort of momentum between Sonic spinning around and just kind of blazing through things and the way Donkey Kong or Diddy Kong or Dixie Kong move, which is fast, but with a little bit more weight and sort of humph.
A little bit more humph.
Is what I'm trying to say.
Happy Humph Day.
Happy Hump Day with Donkey Kong. It's your favorite day.
I'm going to start calling him Donkey Humph.
Donkey Humph, yeah.
Finally, I'll get him impeached.
Now you're going to like the games because now it's Donkey Humph and it's all different and it's better.
So when you say like, is it like, in other words, like a little bit more feeling of not just momentum, but like weight in the movement, like whereas like Sonic can be a little floaty sometimes.
Yeah, Sonic is just fast, but he has the weight of like a little flea or something. Like Donkey Kong feels like a
why are you fucking legging Sonic right now?
I love good Sonic games, and there are more
which
than
one.
One
which one
good
was
Sonic
which one
games.
Is that?
Two is
Sonic
fantastic.
Mania,
Sonic Adventure,
Sonic Mania.
Sonic Adventure has its ups and downs.
Yeah, it's got a good ass fishing game.
It's got it. Yeah, Big the Cat is a fantastic character, a member of the Sega canon, and my friend.
I'm so
same with what was it E2 102 whatever that
that's
robot
right.
was.
That's a sad story. Do you remember that story? That's a sad story.
It's messed up. I did a guide to games on Sonic Adventure. I love Sonic Adventure. So like I said, more than one good Sonic game. But this is a very different type of momentum. And it also it has a lot to do with the level design, which the earlier games had like a very chaotic feel to them. The new games, I think, have... Okay, so I've already said the iterative design bit, right? Oh, you're introduced to an element, you learn it, and then it's going to be twisted on a little bit more dangerously, like, oh, a swinging vine, and then a swinging vine over a pit, or a swinging vine over spikes, that kind of thing. That carries throughout this entire game, and I think it's really well-paced. I think the older games had a kernel of this. They were definitely more obstacle courses than they were, you know, coherent worlds. But I do think that retro, it's like taking it up a notch in a lot of respects in terms of the actual design itself. Yeah.
How has your time with it been?
Well, for me, like the Donkey Kong Country games were defined by finding secret barrels. Like the original Donkey Kong Country games, I think part of what made them distinct other than like the really colorful, you know, like computer graphics, which were like incredible looking at the time, it was trying to find the secrets. It was a game in which like you went into a level and what in front of you was not what you were interested in. It was, well, where is the barrel that gets me to a secret room and things like that. And the country game, the rare ones were just chock full of that stuff to the point where it was like a little absurd or often too much. But as a, like, you know, someone in elementary school who was then all the time in the world, like that was right up my alley. Like you couldn't have too much in a game. That wasn't, that wasn't a thing. And part of what I think retro did was to refine that trait and actually make it more about rewarding like player attention to detail. And so the ones that retro worked on still have like all sorts of secrets. And in some ways I would argue still too many, like playing Tropical Freeze and the first level has you, there are like multiple things you can find. There are occasional stages will have a secret path that will lead you to secret worlds. And then there are, you're trying to spell Kong, you know, pick up letters scattered throughout a world. And then there are these sort of like, I don't know, Jenga pieces, these puzzle pieces that you're finding. And the first level has 9 of them. And these levels are like pretty short, you know, 5 to 10 minutes each, like generally speaking. And 9 pieces is just a lot. Like I was pretty careful on the first level. And I couldn't find all of them, which just seemed like a little suspect. Like that sets up my radar a little bit of like, all right, it's the first level in the game where you're supposed to probably be able to find everything to get a sense of the flow. And it was a little too much. But I would say, like, generally speaking, what I thought they've done very successfully is refine that down and make the exploration. Because if it's a game about momentum, it means it's a little bit slower. It's a little more plotting. Doesn't mean that you aren't making precise jumps or, you know, jumps that, you know, you have to think about and be careful about. But there's a reason to slow down. There's a reason to take in the world around you because you're often rewarded for doing so, whether it's finding a secret cache of bananas that will give you a secret piece, whether it's like, oh, like if you actually just jump up over in this corner, it reveals a whole nother area, which reveals a secret barrel, which reveals a whole, little mini game with a bunch of bananas. And I have found, this was true in the first one, and, I'm only in the second world of Tropical Freeze, I suspect it will carry over into this one, in which the platforming, which is fine and even good, and even really good, it's like the way they embed the secrets into the world is actually some of the most satisfying stuff you find in the game. And I will give them credit. There is they have these items that you can use in a level. They're balloons that you can sort of use at will. And one of them will point out hints in a level about like secrets. So if you want to go back through and find that stuff, there are ways you can kind of get hints along the way. And it's also just a really beautiful game. It's not the original Donkey Kong Country games look pretty crummy now just because that was like really, it was early CG. Like it's just like, it makes sense that like that's less the fault of the art as much as like the tools they were working with. Although I'm sure you'll find plenty of people that don't like the art to that game like at the time. But I think they have there are secret stages where like, you like rather than a full world, it's like it's silhouetted, so it's like kind of like it's not quite black and white, but it's like very limited color palette, and it's like a different way to look at the game. And then they are keeping that in mind with how they're embedding the secrets in the world. And it's just it's a very thoughtful game, is what I'll say. Is like I'm not sure if you necessarily look at platformers and think thoughtful is like the first word that comes to mind, but that is definitely one of the descriptors I would use for Retro's approach to the Donkey Kong Country games.
Yes,
right. Cool. Well, that is out. Is that out now? Is that
today?
Yeah.
Oh, wow. Nice. Yeah. Awesome. I'll be honest. I probably still won't find time for it because it's been a very busy season. But I definitely, from watching kind of the video review, that should also be going up, either today or tomorrow, probably.
Sure. Yeah, hopefully today.
somewhere in there. In reading your review in this conversation, I think I have a deeper understanding of your love for the series, and I hope that, the Switch, lots of people have Switches. More people have Switches than I think ever had Wii U's.
Yeah.
So I hope some people are able to pick it up and have fun with it.
Also,
yeah, that's my last. Oh, go ahead. Go ahead, Patrick.
Oh, I was just going to say that when this game was announced, Nintendo had, they should just make another Metroid Prime or give Retro something else to do. When this game was announced, part of the reason it got ignored was because people like just fundamentally disagreed on Nintendo's decision to assign Retro to make another Donkey Kong Country game. And I think myself included looked at like what Retro had done with the Metroid Prime series and was like, even if you don't make another Metroid Prime, that's fine. But like you have like this, just make a... Donkey Kong Country seemed like beneath them in a way that I think contributed to, and this is someone who platforming is their favorite genre. Like I'm not going to scoff at a really good platformer, but I found myself scoffing at it because I was like, oh, really? Like this is what, like Retro's, the only other game they're going to make this generation is another fucking Donkey Kong Country game. And I think that really was like a big response to this game that contributed to people ignoring it, was like Nintendo sort of ignoring what people wanted from that studio. And so I guess that's just my way of saying like, yo, if you don't do this again, because I think people will riot if they make another Donkey Kong Country game.
Right.
Except me, of course.
Except for you. Well, you'll riot, but like the way that like after a sports game at Penn State.
Yeah, I'm going to throw bananas everywhere.
That's exactly it. And turn over cars and not get into any trouble somehow. Who could say why? Awesome. Well, I'm glad that you're having, I think it's been a really cool couple of weeks in a weird way for games, because I feel like all of us have gotten a game that is extremely our particular shit in terms of like, I don't just mean like, oh, it's a game that we love, but I mean like between God of War, Battletech, Donkey Kong Tropical Freeze,
Frostpunk
for Rob. Yeah, totally. Yakuza 6 just came out for Danica. Like obviously Danica's had a copy of that for a while, but we're in it. Like we're in a nice gift. It was like games are a gift and they're being gifted to us, and they have been pretty cool lately. They're very much like lots of itches being scratched, you know?
Yeah.
Y'all playing anything else? I know Danielle, you dipped into Swords of Ditto.
Yeah, I dittoed. A little bit.
Patrick and I talked about this a couple of weeks ago, and he and I both had kind of a rough time with it. And I streamed it, and like the stream didn't go great because I got caught in the same loop that I complained about here, which was this like needing to grind to unlock the next toy dungeon, which felt like the only way forward to prepare for the fight against the boss.
And the fact that leveling actually means absolutely nothing. There is no reason to level. You come back a higher level, but all the world levels with you. So why did I bother doing that in the first place?
Really bummed me out. And then after I finished doing that stream, I got an IM from Jack DeKeat, who occasional Waypoint contributor, friend of mine, who says, who's like, I'm having the best time with this game. And I'm like, why aren't you running into any of these problems? He's like, I don't even care about the toy dungeons. Like, I'll get to the toy dungeons when I get to them. I'm just like going around and doing little side quests and finding all these little secrets. And every room has like a secret dungeon. And there was a post on the forums over at discourse.zone, our forums, where someone kind of laid out a few things like that too, that was like, if you try to do the main plot, or like you just focus on what the game is saying you should be doing, you might not have a good time with it. And instead, try to find secrets on every single stage or every single like kind of map screen. And I'm curious which of those two experiences, or somewhere in between again, or something else entirely, have you been having with that game?
Yeah, definitely more of a Jack DeKeat experience. And I went in with fairly low expectations because I knew that both of you kind of had, you know, some feelings about the game for sure. And my girlfriend the other night was just like, let's play something co-op. And she had grabbed the game. So, you know, we just dived in and really had a lot of fun just messing around.
That is also a distinction, though, right? Which is neither Patrick nor I have played that game co-op.
Oh,
and specifically, it's so easy to die in that game, especially if you're trying to do some of the main quest stuff that you might not be prepared for. And when you play co-op, you can revive each other, which I can imagine.
And we do a lot of that.
One of you died, you actually just started the game over.
Like, we just revived each other.
No, I know, but I'm saying, imagine our experience, which is not co-op, and every time one of you died in your game, it's just like, nah, fuck it. Like, why don't you just start from scratch and lose all your stuff?
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, that would suck.
I could see that being an issue for sure. Yeah, absolutely. I guess I didn't actually watch your streams. I'm sorry.
No, it's fine.
Heard the, you know, the scuttlebutt that like, no, this game's a little weird in the way that progression happens. And I typically am like allergic to bad progression systems in games. Like if I lose progress, I just want to crawl in a hole and die a little bit. It's just like, I don't know why, but it's so depressing to me. That's why Dark Souls can be very difficult for some people. But yeah, like playing it with my girlfriend has been extremely fun. We've been doing a lot of little side quests, even though we ran into what may have been a bug. Like there's a little side quest where you have to give a flask to a guy named Fetty. And like, we found Fetty, but he did not want the flask. He was in like a different place from where he was supposed to be. I don't know what's up with that. I don't know if Fetty has issues or whatever, or something went wrong. But yeah, we're having a lot of fun. It's really cute. And that helps, I think, a lot. It's just really, really adorable. I love the graphics. I kind of love the music. I like the writing a lot. Like the little diaries you get, the little conversations.
Right,
they
talked about that. You know, so like the diaries, I found one of them. I found one, like, I think we talked about this a couple of weeks ago in terms of the like story coming out, the kind of like meta story of the history of the island kind of unfolding via these like tablets you find, out of order. You just kind of find them in random order. And I've only found one of those so far, but that was like intriguing for sure.
Yeah. Yeah, I think it's really cool. Like, I don't know, it feels almost more costume quest than Zelda in certain ways, although I know Zelda is kind of the, you know, somewhere between Zelda and Binding of Isaac is where I've heard it sort of pitched, which makes sense, certainly, but I got like a super costume quest vibe from it, like a very sort of like casual, cute, cartoony, and also very like, even down to the mechanics like stickers. You actually had stickers in that game as well that gave you buffs in combat and that sort of thing. Obviously, it's not a turn-based RPG or anything like that. Just something about it really gave me
like
that vibe.
The tone and the aesthetic a little bit?
Definitely the aesthetic,
cool.
Very, very, like, cute and, like, little cartoon came to life kind of thing.
I am going to try to get back into it and give it a little shot, maybe this weekend, and see if I can be a little more chill.
I tried to do it, Austin. Fuck. Like after your stream, I sat down. I was like, my wife had gone to bed. She went to bed early. I had like 2.5 hours to myself. I was like, I'm going to do it. Like, I want to like this game so much. And I just banged my head at it. And just 2 hours later, I said, okay, like this is, I'm letting you go. I'm letting you go.
Frustrating feeling of like, I really want to love this thing, but it won't let me love it. Aww. I know you had it with, I think we both had it, Patrick, with Flint Hook when that game came out. Which is like, I love how this looks. I love it so much, but I just can't get my head to actually listen to what my eyes and my heart want it to do. You know, I think there's a bunch of games like that. Actually, we just, Patrick, you and I just played one of those, I think. Let's take a quick break, and then when we come back, we will talk about Monster Prom, another game we just played that I wish I could love. All right, we'll be right back.
A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. United Healthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
Okay, let's talk about monsters and dating them and why it should be great.
And why let's talk about my boyfriend Scott and how we're going to go away together and be very happy, and he loves football, and he is my boy.
Sure. He is your boy. Actually, I saw that happen. Scott is definitely the best character in that game. I love Scott. So I'm with you, I think. So we played a game called Monster Prom on stream this morning. It was you, me, Patrick, you and me, plus Natalie and Danica. Monster Prom is a game by developer Beautiful Glitch. I don't know if they've done other stuff before. I don't know the name. I think it was a Kickstarter game. There was like a whole kind of Kickstarter backer page in their credits, that has an immediately grabbing aesthetic, from the kind of surf rock music to the character designs. You're going to a monster high school. You're going to Spooky High, and all of the characters are all the kind of other characters are kind of stock monster tropes, right? So you have like the zombie boy, and you have the jock werewolf, exactly, and like the
geeky vampire,
right? The geeky hipster vampire boy, and the ghost, the kind of like party girl ghost, and you know, a gorgon, you know, with all the snake hair, and like she's like the mean girl. And on first blush, it is like such my thing. It is very clearly and openly indebted to the Yogg, which is one of my favorite games of all time. I did a guide to games on the Yogg that you can find over on our YouTube page. And it is sort of a turn-based kind of adventure storytelling game, or maybe not even an adventure game, it's the wrong, like point-and-click adventure, visual novel type thing, where you are like choosing where you want to go during a certain class time, right? It's like, oh, do you go to class? Do you go to the gym? Do you go to the library? Do you go to the bathrooms and kind of hang out and be a bad kid by the bathrooms? And you're raising your stats, you know, you're raising your boldness or your smarts or your charm or whatever, and are gaining relationship. You're moving closer and closer with these other characters. You're moving closer with Polly Geist the ghost, or hey, whoever. Y'all. That's Pat. We did voices. It's a very good stream. It's a very good stream, I think. And I think the weirdest thing about the stream is you can see us slowly falling out of love with the game. It was a weird situation because I booted it up to make sure we could stream it and make sure it was all going to work. And I played through a single player thing, right? It's a 4-player game, but you can play by yourself. And so I played through a quick little like 20-minute game. And I was immediately like, the writing is rubbing me kind of the wrong way. Like, it's a little too edgy. Like, it's a little bit too, like, insincere. It doesn't want to take anything too seriously. It's a little too, like, a little bit too referencey, a little bit too, like, I'm on the internet humor. But there's something here, and the art is fantastic, and I really love the way the Yogg works, and I love that style of game and want more of those. So we went forward with the stream, and at first I think we were having a really good time. That seems right, Patrick?
Oh, yeah. I mean, there are...
Like, for the first hour.
Yeah, I mean, there are some lines that land really, really well. There's a character that we're introduced to called Dante, who is just... Like, his writing was pretty much, like, you know, top to bottom, just, like, really just funny and... like, we were all, like, genuinely guffawing.
We were cracking up.
Yeah. Like, and, you know, part of that was how we were playing it, but But like a lot of it was like the writing and the world and the art all colliding in a way that sometimes actually did feel sincere enough for us to like let our guard down and like get into a balance between the characters we were playing and the characters that the game, you know, wanted us to play or was guiding us into. But I think we genuinely were having a really, really good time for about the first hour.
And then bit by bit, and I wish Danica and Natalie could be on today, but they can't.
Bit by a specific word choices.
Line by line. line by line, it certainly became two things happened. One, it was just like really dedicated to not just the characters saying kind of using kind of ableist language, you know, words like describing people as crazy, kind of preying on like some weird ideas around like homelessness, and like being able to, and some like weird classist shit around like poor people, and some of that comes through characters where I think it kind of makes sense that like the shitty rich mean girl is going to be a shitty rich mean girl. Like I get that trope, but it often slipped into the narrator's voice too, where the narrator would just say like, you know, now you're acting crazy. And it's like, like, please push yourself. Like as you pointed out, Patrick, like, it's one thing when you slip up in conversation and say a word that you know you don't want to actually say, but sometimes you're grasping for something and you reach for kind of a filler word that you've learned through being in culture where we say words like crazy often
stupid is a very common one.
Stupid, idiotic. Yeah,
and it's
totally.
Like, it's so easy. When you spend 30 years of your life, you like words just sound right and things just sound like the way you would express it. But there's a difference between writing and speaking, especially when you're making a game that is being pitched to certain communities that like are like very queer dominated. Like that's right. like you're making a visual novel game in which like there's gender fluidity, and it's like, well, all right, you're dancing in this pool. Like you've got to you got to keep going deeper.
Right. And part of that surface level thing where I get to decide which boy or which girl to date. Do you know what I mean?
Right.
It has to go. I would like it to go a step further. It doesn't have to do anything, but when it doesn't, I'm going to call it out for it. You know?
And it's because it wasn't just once or twice. It was like you were getting into the double digits, like 20 plus times that using language that was not just a bad, you know, a shitty character being shitty, and that was part of their characterization. It was clearly like they wanted to tell a joke or describe something a certain way, and it's just that's like they were using crutch words, and they're crutch words because they're easy. Like I get it, but when you're doing writing, something that you have time to refine and have other people look over, like it's less excusable when it's something that was clearly looked at by a lot of people a lot of times, as opposed to like, you're on a podcast and, you know, you're working to get things out of your language. I mean, that stuff's not, you know, we slip on that. It's not excusable as much as like it's understandable and something you work to get better at, as opposed to like a script that there's just less of a reason to be like, oh, how did that get through?
Yeah.
Well, it's also, you know, one of the weird things here too is the whole conceit of playing as monsters, right? Like monsters in high school is such a potent and long running trope. Like I think it's one of those things that's like, it's one of those reminders that a trope isn't bad. It's just that a trope is a trope and that you need to remember that tropes have history and baggage and stuff. And are you going to use them in a really good way or not? And so there's lots of TV shows and comic books and novels and, you know, cartoons and movies and songs about being a monster in high school, right? The notion of like, I'm growing up to become a monster is so effective. Often, I said on our stream that I really like a game called Monster Hearts, which is a tabletop RPG by Avery Adler that is literally about, that is about monster, becoming a monster, being a monster as a sort of metaphor for emerging queerness and understanding what your identity is. But even just for puberty, even just for like becoming an adult, like there have been so many movies where a kid, you know, fears becoming a monster like their parents are. Do you know what I mean? Like literally that thing. It's a potent and useful thing. But here, it isn't used in that way outside of just like some of the stuff around the edges of like be your worst self. and like the worst self thing only works if it's a little bit sincere and if you dig into the fact that like – cocaine is in this game like a lot. That's why I made that joke before about how there are lots of lines that clue you in, because like out of the like it starts with like a one throwaway bit, and then by like 20 minutes later every time we did an interaction coke came up, and it was a weird crutch, but also was never like I'm not saying that you need to make a game about how cocaine is bad or where addicts or users are people who should be belittled or sorry, that they should be kind of used as villains or something like that.
Or cannon fodder, basically.
Belittled. Right. I'm not saying that you should be punching anybody for drug use alone. But I do think that there is something in the way this game does that's like so flippant about it that it's not. It's just like, oh yeah, and then of course you're gonna give the coach, the football coach, coke so that he doesn't kick the star quarterback off the team for his coke use. And it's like, okay, like is this going somewhere? Like where are we going with this? Like not really, it's a throwaway bit.
Yeah, we never there was no conclusion to that story.
I think if you had gone to buy the coke, it would have actually come into play probably. And just one of those things. It's like there's so many moving parts. And so many opportunities for sincerity here or there, where the characters could be being taken a little bit more seriously. Not all the way to like Cruel Intentions, you know, melodrama, but like to Steven Universe, to Adventure Time levels. Do you know what I mean? Like, and that's the aesthetic it draws on. It very much looks like a Cartoon Network show. Like not even an Adult Swim show. It looks like a Cartoon Network, like show for kids that has a big adult audience. Or like a big late teenager, early 20s audience, you know?
Yeah, can I ask, like, did it come off as, like, whoever wrote this or made this or whatever just thinks that cocaine is hilarious and that just becomes the joke that they fall back on all the time? Like,
yes.
Okay.
It's just lazy. I don't think it's like...
Yeah.
I don't think it's like...
intentionally saying something about cocaine. It's just like, I think it's
the first time you say it. My first read on it was like, oh my God, these fucking bougie rich monsters, right? Like who are in this like, prep school for monster kind or whatever. And there's a version of that I think flies. It is the kind of Cruel Intentions joke. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
But by the fourth one, it's like, yeah, we heard that joke before. You know, like by the fifth time that the mermaid princess is like talking about poor people. And then there isn't really a way to get – there's another big one. It was like Natalie ended up on a route like right away with this character who she hated. And there was no way to not help this character do stuff. You've played the Yogg, right, Danielle?
Yes, I did.
All right. So like, you know how –
I played that game and it's good.
You know how – right. Yeah. So you know in the Yogg where it's like, okay, you wander into the woods and you hear the howl of a werewolf. Do you like stand your ground and prepare to fight, or do you cast a protection spell around you to ward all sorts of were creatures off? You know, like that's the basic gist. So the version of that in this is like you're having a conversation with the mermaid queen, and what she says is like she wants to become the prom queen. And so either gather all of her forces and go to war with everybody on the food, you know, in the high school, or build a monument to the cruelty of her family so everyone knows how powerful they are. There's no like, no, actually, like I don't, and you didn't, Natalie never like decided to be on that route. She just wound up on that route and then she was stuck there for the entire game. She could not like get an event that was not about that character for the most part. And so like stuff like that was just a bummer. And it was like, I think it's rare that you hear us like fall in and then out of love with a game in the period of you know an hour and a half to 2 hours. I still think it's a stream worth watching with, again, the content warnings around things like drug use, ableist language, and some really weird classist shit that sneaks up. But I really wish it lived up to its soundtrack and its look and even its basic premise. I do like Monster High School as a setting. Any other thoughts on that, Patrick?
It's 90% of the way there, and then it's that 10% that it sort of lost us, and that's too bad because there's so much to like, and I came out of it and like, oh, I had a really good time, but I'm never gonna go back to it, and the way it soured as it went along was a bummer. I if you watch our stream, I think you can kind of get what you would need to get out of like what's good about that game or what's interesting about it. And also, it just seems like, if you want something like that, like there are other games out there that can fulfill it without having to go down this route.
Yeah. The other thing there that's weird, I'm like looking at screenshots and stuff now, is that like for a game that again is using this monster analogy, like all of, I don't know, I'm not going to like go down the fucking rabbit hole here about, all right, think about something like Dream Daddy, right? Which Dream Daddy has its critics. Dream Daddy is one of those games that I think had a lot of mainstream crossover attention and led a lot of people to say things about the genre of visual novels that were, it was an overreach because they just weren't familiar with the genre, you know, which I'm not being too judgy. I hope I'm not sounding too judgy about that. People often just show up and like, oh wow, this thing is cool. And it's not like what I thought the genre was. And therefore I'm going to hold it up as being an exception, even though you might not know that. It's, you're so excited about the thing you like that you kind of rely on supposition and assumption. That game though, for everything that you can kind of argue against it if you wanted to, does have like characters of different body types. It doesn't just like adhere to a very strict standard of like what hotness is. Like there are some big bulky dream daddies in that game. Everyone in this game is just like extremely like traditional body type hotness. Like all of the women are like the same exact thin like body shape, like, you know, inverted triangle situation. Like there's a thin boy, a buff boy, and then like a like thin buff boy, and that is it. And also like I'm surprised there weren't any genderqueer characters in this game that like lets you as the player pick they as a pronoun. There aren't any characters here who, as far as I saw, that are dateable, that are they them. And again, like I'm not taking points off my review. Yeah, I'm just, it's frustrating. It's frustrating that something that seems like it wants to walk that path then kind of pulls back on these other ways, or like doesn't really commit to the bit in some way, or doesn't really, what it is, it's like it has the parts, it has the Lego parts laid out on the table to build a really cool pirate ship or to build a really cool monster high school. And instead it builds a monster high school that forgot to build the library. They didn't, you know, they didn't finish the gym. The bit that's supposed to be the cool school crest somehow got turned into the walls of the bathroom. And also it doesn't sound as cool as what I'm describing. It looks bad also.
This sounds like, honestly, the sort of thing that would be what a revolution for having queer characters at all in 2002 or something.
Yes,
it sounds like one of those.
In 2014, we would have had that.
Yes, yes,
totally, totally, absolutely. And I'm glad that the conditions of the marketplace, so to speak, have been pushed to where a game like this can relate, can find some degree of success, can get talked about. So you know, it is. At the very least, the context around it makes me hopeful, and hopefully the devs take some notes and go back and make another game that's really good, you know?
And I'll say, as someone that like really only occasionally dips their toes into these types of games, if you looked at this and were like, oh, like, you know, maybe React like me, we're like, oh, these are kind of interesting, but they're often curiosities because they're not sort of like the typical thing that you end up playing. Like, I found Dream Daddy to be like a much more satisfying arc, both from like the role playing that you could do as like the actual player and like the options you have in front of you for where the story can go. Dream Daddy is like a much more expressive game that also is like deeply funny and interesting. So it's like, if you found this and like we're bummed at like what it, now that Dream Daddy doesn't have his critics or things that people didn't like about it, but if you looked at this and were like, ah, damn, like I wish, like I was curious about this, but you didn't play Dream Daddy, like I would point you to that game.
Cool. Yeah. I think that's more than fair. All right. One more thing I want to ask you about, Patrick,
which is
last night I saw a tweet from you.
You did.
That said that you finally did it. You got your first Into the Breach win.
Yeah.
Welcome to the club. Also, I saw a tweet from Danielle this weekend that said that you got a shirt. You got an Into the Breach shirt. And I'm very jealous.
I'm wearing it right now. Wearing an Into the Breach t-shirt. It's Riff Walkers, and it's great.
Did you wear that yesterday?
I did. It's, you know.
Damn. I'm not judging.
I've taken
just
like two
shirt.
Showers a day for the last couple days, so I feel like I'm allowed to wear this shirt 2 days in a row. It's a double shower day. So
I'm just saying, like, Into the Breach has multiple timelines, and I was in my head, I was like, I could have sworn she said she wore that shirt yesterday, too.
It's correct.
You were wild.
Yeah, I fell off Into the Breach, not because I didn't like it or want to play more, but because just other things came up after that game came out in, what, February? End of February?
Yeah, February, I think is right.
I think it was Far Cry, honestly, that came along that kind of punted me off that. And then, you know, I've been kind of circling both Frostpunk and Battletech, and I installed both of them, and I was like, I kind of settled on Frostpunk being the game that I think was like a little more approachable and something like different than what I have played. Like, I don't really play like city builders. Like, that's not like a thing. But Frostpunk, from what people had mentioned, seemed like, oh, that's like approachable for someone that's not super sort of like versed in that type of game. But I was like, ah, I can't do that without at least finishing Into the Breach once, right? Like, that doesn't right. feel good. And I was like, and I made it to the final island Into the Breach. Like it was, I got far enough to be like, oh, I could do this. Like, I just didn't. And so I went and loaded it up, and I had a save, like, you know, a run that was already had been going from whatever back in March. And I was like, ah, fuck. All right. Well, and I don't even remember that much about this game. I was like, well, I'll just pick this up and then I can just approach it as it doesn't matter. Like, this run right. means nothing because I don't remember what I was doing, what my like meta strategy was. And so we'll just do this to get re-familiar with the mechanics and then I'll start another run and we'll see how it goes. Well, damn. I just ran in, I just went into this game and just started fucking wrecking fools. Now, specifically, I was using, I don't know what the team was. I'm sure Austin and Danielle, you can inform them. It's one of the Jets where you smoke as a lot of your, how you're covering
it's
the
like
map.
That with the plane, that one,
yeah, there's the
and
plane.
The artillery that is the, oh my god, it's not the Flaming Behemoths.
No, the Flaming Behemoths have a
have actual fire rust, the Rusting Hulks.
Yes, the Rusting Hulks. Yes. And so like the yeah, the three units, there's yeah, you're set up with like a this jet that can move a lot across the map and then can also its primary means of attack is like laying these
I love that jet so
laying
much.
These
so
yeah, good. Laying these smoke tiles that can that also cause damage over time if you're on top yep. of it. And there's a rocket sort of like artillery unit that does a lot of long distance stuff, and then there's this kind of spider looking creature that is mostly for just pushing units around. And I just yeah, I had like three. I had like I basically like did the second island and didn't get touched like more like once nice. Or twice, and nice. I was like fuck. And I managed to get these like really good upgrades, like specifically the upgrade that put the run over the top, and then it just made it so that the enemies really couldn't do anything to me was the one where as the I think it's I'm not sure it's for any of the units or it was just the spider creature, but it was the one where for a kind of like a in a kind of cross formation over five squares anywhere on the map once per round you can just place down a bunch of cloud.
Yes, that's such a good upgrade for that team.
And it the reason it changes everything is because often what happens as a match starts to go wrong is that like you get surrounded, you have like them attacking like you know five different buildings, and you just don't have enough to like dissuade them, and that's when you have to start relying on like you know rolling of the dice or hopefully if you have enough power in reserve to take a couple of hits. Like the strategy then becomes like actually is like crunching people into a corner, because also what the cloud does specifically is that it doesn't just create a cloud that attacks the unit, it prevents them from attacking.
Right, and it then, disables them completely for that round.
And the cloud doesn't go away, it's just a permanent part of the map. And so, like, you can start to imagine, like, when you upgrade the jet, you can, the initial attack is just creating one you can only jump one unit and place down a cloud. Well, then you can upgrade that so it can jump two units. And so anyway, like long story short, you end up being able to just like literally create a whole cloud over the map and just control territory in a way that the enemy just doesn't have a lot of fucking options.
Yep.
And the last upgrade I got for my jet was there's one that you can it's like he has like wind turbines. And the wind turbines allow you to shift everyone on the map, the entire map, every unit, over one tile, south, east, or west. You can only use it – there is an upgrade that you can use it infinite number of times. I had just use it once. But it basically meant like in a situation where I had my back against the wall, I could just shift every unit over one, like includes your units too, and kind of reset the board. So anyway,
wow.
I kind of ran the table and then got to the final map where, like, with two turns left, like there was just actually nothing they could do. Like I could have actually just done nothing, let my characters,
and you still would have made,
and
it.
I still would have won.
Nice, nice. That's
and it was really
feeling.
Satisfying. Like it was a nice arc to finish. Like I want to go back to that game. I have suspicion that I'm probably just going to set it aside and wait for the inevitable Switch version of that game. Which may, you know, maybe a year and a half from now, that may be a long ways off. They've said they're interested in other things, but, you know, it's going to take time. But now I feel like I had, like, a very satisfying arc with that game where I, like, wrapped my head around it. I found a team I was comfortable with, like, got to the end and saw victory. And, yeah, Into the Breach. I come to it as someone that doesn't play a lot of strategy games, really does not consider them to be good at them. Like, right. Like tactics and strategy and thinking several moves ahead is just not, like, it's just not something that clicks for me very well. But I thoroughly enjoyed Into the Breach, so... that was the story of my victory, and I'm excited to go play Frostpunk.
Nice.
Because I heard from other folks that...
I also want to sit down with that this weekend, maybe.
Yeah. Yeah, I like the idea of a game
so
that
many games.
Is, you're meant to fail.
Totally.
Oh, and
totally.
I finished Far Cry 5, and that ending fucking sucks, and I don't think I liked that game at all.
It ain't great. It's that
I'm
ending...
not even sure it's good, but I will say the most fun I had with it was when you and I played together on stream. I think, similar to Swords of Ditto... My guess is for Far Cry 5 is like a fundamentally different game in co-op. Because
in
when
co-op,
you,
yeah.
When you have like someone coming over in the sky in a plane or just, I don't know. Like when I was playing the game, when I would look at the people who were the AI fighting with me, if that was another person, I could just imagine it being a more interesting game. Because the story doesn't do anything. The story is bad. It's really, really bad. It doesn't work as politics. It doesn't work as just...
As just
storytelling,
as just regular, as just like in the realm of American freedom fighter stories or whatever. Do you know what I mean? Like it's not even Red Dawn. You know, like,
The endings, neither of them, the good or bad ending, I don't feel are earned or
no,
like,
not
interesting
at all.
Conclusions to the story. And I didn't like the war. Like I think it's probably like the prettiest world they built for a Far Cry game, but I didn't like the way the systems interacted at all.
Yeah.
I didn't
it doesn't
like
produce,
the fact,
it doesn't produce those moments that you want from
I would get them every once in a while and be like, oh, like, I can see it. Like, the game I want is over there.
Yep.
And I wonder, and that's what made me wonder if the co-op experience would then, by virtue of just more things colliding, would produce those moments
more
often.
Yeah, so I played, like, another 4 or 5 hours, I think, in co-op than you did. I played with somebody else before the review, like ahead of the review, so I could get that experience. And it does a little bit, but only really if you are role playing a little bit. Where like if you were like, I'm going to be the sniper and I'm going to climb tall towers, and you're going to be the person with the shotgun who gets into close fights. But when you're both just like, I'm going to play to win, and that means having a sniper rifle and also having a shotgun and also having a, you know, mid-range weapon and also having a silenced weapon, like, you just kind of clear it out really quickly, and there isn't much that can stand in your way, and that's just, like, a little too clean-cut, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
I don't know. It's still more fun. You can still get into more hijinks. I wish the game was, like, not more difficult, but more... dynamic
Like there is so like the world is very busy, like you cannot turn around without like having like trucks rolling through or like a bunch of enemies roll up on you, but I think the game fundamentally like confuses just stuff on the screen accidentally colliding is not what I look for from those games. Like it's just more as opposed to interesting. And I never found the conflicts of systems to actually result in surprising, like occasionally it did, but just not enough to the point that it, I don't know. It's just not what I expected from, not what I want from a Far Cry game. And I don't know. I was bitterly sort of disappointed. Like I remember the first 5 or 6 hours, I remember even on these podcasts saying like, well, I'm still kind of having fun with it. But I think I was clinging to a version of Far Cry that I kept thinking was going to show up. And as I got further, I kept realizing, oh, the version that I want of this game just isn't here.
Yeah.
Because I've seen lots of people saying like they really like the game and they like the mechanics and like more power to you. I guess if this is the where Far Cry is going, then maybe it's just okay. Like this series is just not in the direction that I was hoping for.
Totally. There's anything else here that I've played or that y'all have gotten into?
I finished making a game.
You did. You want to talk about that a little bit?
Yeah. I mean, it's just a tiny little thing, but. I was really pleased to sort of finish up Dora the Lesbian Frog, the epic game. where you make a choice between kissing your girlfriend, who's an axolotl, and listening to a shitty bird in a fedora who hangs out in a parking lot. And, you know, I have like sort of a happy ending and a sad ending. And that's basically what we did on stream yesterday. I sort of finished all the code for the game off stream because that could be probably kind of boring to watch. And we just sort of made ridiculous art for the game myself in the stream. I mean, it's me doing it, but like asking the stream for input.
Yeah.
Really totally. Rad. Really, really nice. Lots of great suggestions. And also, if I did have a code question, people were really good and awesome about helping me out for that. So, yeah. I'm probably going to just put it on like my itch.io page or my itch.io page. I should just say itch.io. It's fine. I'll probably put it on my page where I have a few other little tiny games. I don't make big things. I make tiny, 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 tiny little like 30-second things. And occasionally like a thing I've been working on for a while, a 10-minute thing, which is like, wow, you know, for me. but yeah, really, really fun. Pico 8 is really rad and I'd like to play with it some more.
Totally. All right. I think it's going to do it for us this week. Do y'all want to go and talk about some waypoints? Unfortunately, I didn't have time to go through all the email and pull stuff out. And I don't want to do the thing where I'm just like scrambling through and grabbing questions I didn't pre-screen. So let's talk about what you're doing this weekend. Any good plans? Any games you're going to go play? Anything you want to recommend to somebody else?
I've been watching a show that I don't know if I like it, but I can't stop watching it.
Ooh.
And that's Billions. I wrote I did a tiny little open thread this week about it. It's a show where, like, everybody's such a piece of shit. Like, they really are. The premise of the show really, really, really basically. And it's changed a bit over the seasons. But the general premise is it's sort of about this AG who is going after this ridiculous billionaire who made his money in an unscrupulous way. Of course, sort of betting against something to do with 9/11, basically. And he's rich and he has his firm and they do horrible things. And the AG dude, which is Paul Giamatti, probably at his finest in Chinless. It's beautiful. I love that man so much. he's such a great actor. I just love him. and everybody's kind of an asshole in this world, right? And I'm not always entirely sure if the show, I think the show right. is meant to be very satirical. But there are times on this show where it is just delighting in showing sort of conspicuous consumption and the, you know, the lifestyles of the rich and famous in a way that I'm like, I'm not sure if you're entirely on board with critiquing this world, Billions, right. but I can't stop watching. I mean, amazing performances, amazing writing, amazing, beautifully crafted show. So
right, right.
I cannot stop watching it.
Awesome. Cool. Yeah. I will recommend a book, a novella that I just read. Disclosure, it's written by someone who I was once in an IRC channel with for a while. Like, we're not particularly tight or anything, but I mean, you know, we're internet friends at this point. We're Twitter mutuals. It's by Brooke Bolander, who wrote a book called The Only Harmless Great Thing. Which is a kind of short novella, 90 pages. You'll blow right through it. I blew through it on a subway ride back from Brooklyn the other day. That is I guess it's sort of like an alternate history, like modern alternate history story that comes from three or four different perspectives. I guess it's from three different perspectives. It is a woman who's a scientist who's goal is to prevent people from going to this area that has a bunch of radioactive material buried under the ground. It is from the perspective of a woman who used to use or work with elephants alongside elephants to work with radium. This is kind of radium girls are a real thing during the World War II. They're kind of factory workers who got radiation poisoning from painting stuff with radium, with atomic energy that gave them cancer. And it imagines them working alongside these elephants. And the third perspective is from these elephants who have this whole culture, who have this whole kind of tribal society and kind of a history of storytelling and a kind of troubled history with humans. And one of them is Topsy, the elephant that was put to death on Coney Island with electric current. People often think that it's the Edison, that was like Edison killed this elephant to prove that whatever alternating current was better than the other type of current that I always forget. That's not actually what happened. But in this kind of dark kind of alternative history thing, it ends up being this really interesting story about, or like thematically about the place of women and the place of storytelling, and the place of technology in history and culture. Short little read again. It's called The Only Harmless Great Thing. Really, really good. Patrick, how about you? Wow.
I'm going to recommend a podcast that I think you might have started listening to after I recommended it to you, called mm-hmm. Citations Needed.
Yep.
Which after 2016, I like a lot of people listen to a lot of political podcasts, but I chose to also take that moment to like try and start reexamining sort of my own politics and like looking at like, you know, when I went Bernie Sanders and Clinton and like feeling myself like drifting leftward, but not necessarily like knowing where to land and like looking for places to sort of like articulate like core problems with, sort of like where things had fallen like center right with like Obama and Clinton and like that sort of like older, more centrist sort of liberal politics. And like one of the places that people pointed me towards was like, oh, like if you want something that's like unabashedly like left, like listen to Chapo Trap House. And I tried for like a month and a half, and one, I didn't find them particularly funny. Two, and this is more important, I wasn't getting out of that podcast what I was looking for, which was like a deep examination and articulation of what is wrong with certain positions on the left that makes them a problem and why we should be going in a different direction. Right. A lot of that podcast assumes knowledge, like assumes you come into it going that you know why those positions are wrong or have problems. And also like just, yo, we all self-identify as socialists here. Like, why wouldn't you? And I'm like, oh, well, like, okay, like, sorry, I grew up in the age of Obama, and like, I don't necessarily consider myself a centrist, but have certain centrist positions by virtue of the politics I grew up in. I want to learn and like move in a different direction, but I also need people to explain like why, like what's the journey there.
To bring you on board, right?
Yeah, I wanted the explanation. I wanted the pitch. And Citations Needed was some, I think after mentioning something like this somewhere else, someone said, hey, you should try listening to that podcast. And it is 100% like what I have been looking for. It is two really smart people talking about – I mean, it's not that they don't dunk on the right and do their own shit talking about Trump. And like, it's not like it's ignoring the problems that of like power on the right that is like predominant in our society right now. But it's also realizing, hey, when the left eventually comes to power again, because by virtue of just – the pendulum will swing at some point. Like, what do you do with that? And how do we transform the left in the meantime? And they both talk about that and explain, like the obsession with Israel, like the obsession with like the different parts of like centrist politics. Like, and they articulate, bring people on, talk through those discussions in a way that was like, oh, aha. Yeah. Like, these are the things that like a lot of my friends on Twitter that are like more publicly left than I am. And I want to move in that direction, but I didn't. No one was sitting there explaining it to me, like, how they got there or how you can get there. And this podcast, like, it doesn't talk down to you, but it talks and articulates all that stuff. And so I really cannot recommend it enough, because I found it to be like I, yes, I love listening to a podcast that take a dump on Trump. Like, I need that release, but, like, that's not enough, right? Like, and it's not enough, especially when things eventually go back to power in a direction that we're looking for. Like, when that happens, what do you do with it? And, like, I found Citations Needed to be, like, absolutely vital in me understanding, like, where my own politics are moving going forward.
Totally.
And, like, the kind of candidates I want to support and the kinds of movements I want to get behind.
Yeah, like three recent episodes, just as like a quick pitch on that, like there's one that is a kind of deep dive into the center and right wing meme around PC colleges, politically correct college campuses. That's like, here's where this emerges from. Here is why this entire like line of rhetoric is completely flawed. Here's like what the actual statistics are on this stuff. Really great episode. Then there's one that's about the kind of reasonable Republican trope, the sort of, which is a great episode, which is like, you know, you hear lots of people in the Democratic Party who conceive of the sort of Republican or not
even
just
from, right? Like, yeah, look at right now, like the Never Trump crowd is like the resistance has hashtag resistance has embraced is the David Frums, the Bill Crystals of the world,
who are still like, oh, shitty, who are like still incredibly,
but they talk
fucked.
Nice. They talk, they, right. They're able to do, talk the rhetoric that pleases the left while also still pushing shitty
Totally.
Right, regressive policies.
And then one of my favorite ones as someone who works in the realm of media is an episode that's like, what the hell is wrong with MSNBC? That is like, you know, MSNBC is ostensibly, to use your word, Patrick, you're welcome. The closest we have to a mainstream left media outlet, but major issues like climate change and worker strikes are not brought up, on that network in anywhere near the amount of scale that issues about the Russia investigation are, or that other similar kind of like marquee attention grabbing issues are. And they do a really great deep dive on the kind of history there, the history of MSNBC, but then also bring on a former MSNBC contributor, producer, I believe.
Yeah.
Someone in a production capacity of some sort who, you know, is voice changed and everything because they're still working in media. And it's like, here's how we got there. Like, here's how we went from, or didn't go from anything, but like, here's how we went from like a kind of middle of the road CNN competitor with a weird tech focus to having a little bit of an oppositional position, you know, with the rise of, at the time, Keith Olbermann, and, you know, in opposition to then President Bush, and then Bush 2, and then kind of how that has now changed again in the era of the Rachel Maddows and the Chris Hayeses, who, like, you know, to some degree, I will always believe Chris Hayes feels like he's being held hostage but won't give up the platform because the platform is powerful and he's made that decision. But like, y'all, there's so much just like Russia, and it's brutal sometimes when there are so many other important stories. And that was a really great podcast to help for even me work through some of those feelings and you know, some good discussion about what the cause of that is, the debate over why they end up that way,
right.
You know? So yeah, great job all around. I also really want to watch Billions, Danielle. I really want to add to my list of good TV. All right.
Well, I'm going to have to listen to this podcast now as well.
You should.
I'm not going to go on about it. I'm just saying, I just did Slow Burn last weekend. So.
Oh, did you like it?
Yeah. Oh, I loved it. Oh, awesome. My God. Especially it's the so bit good. About like just the parallels between, disaffected white man voters back then.
Oh, yeah.
And now it was like, oh, fuck.
All that stuff is so good.
Yeah.
All of the – God, who was I just talking to about this? I forget who, but the milkshake ducking of –
Yes.
Of, did we just have this conversation on a podcast? We must have.
No, I don't think we
maybe
did.
Not. Of the lawyer, of the senator who was like the Democratic Southerner who was like the one of like the big hotshots, the kind of the person where we got the trope of now I'm just a country lawyer. Like
country
that guy
lawyer.
Is yep. a guy from the Watergate era who was part of that kind of prosecution team and the kind of an early milkshake duck because he absolutely was this heralded hero who also was like super we're pro segregation.
Oh yeah, total segregationist.
And like again, yeah. those parallels. Like even that dude, you had left leaning publications being like, well, you know, his history with segregation isn't the best it could be, but in a time like this, we have to make concessions and blah blah blah. And it's like, oh,
yeah.
Always making those concessions. Yeah, Slow Burn is really good. Yeah, we can't just turn this into what other podcasts are we listening to?
But, I know.
I really want to listen to Crime Town really bad. That's the next one I want to listen to.
It's about my hometown.
Anyway, it is.
Yeah.
It is. So I'm excited to listen to it. All right, I'm going to stop just talking podcasts. You can follow me on Twitter at Austin_Walker. Where can people find you, Danielle?
At Danielle RI.
How about you, Patrick?
You can find me at Patrick Lupik.
As always, you can send questions to gaming@vice.com. For Monday, I promise I will look through that bucket and try to find some good questions that we've missed over the last couple of weeks. And also, you can follow us on Twitter at twitter.com/waypoint, facebook.com/waypointvice. You can watch the Monster Prom Let's Play playthrough stream that we did over at twitch.tv/waypoint. And it'll probably be up on YouTube in the next couple of days over at youtube.com/waypointvice. Thanks as always to Bowen for letting us use the track Miss You off the EP Pale Machine. Find out more about that at waypoint.zone/BOEN. Oh, also, one more thing really quick. I wanted to announce that the Waypoint 101 game for May is going to be Mad Max, the Avalanche game that came out a few years ago that I've heard mixed things up and down about, but that I'm really curious about. It's from the Just Cause 2 team, Avalanche's Just Cause 2 team. The Just Cause 3 team is a different team than the Just Cause 2 team, and the 2 team went on to make this game along with some other folks. Apparently, Corey Balrog also touched this game in some way. I've heard mixed things. Like I said, highs and lows. It was just available for PS Plus users, and I mentioned on a tweet that people should grab that if they had the chance to. I think it's also part of Xbox Game Pass, and I think it's like $20 on Steam. So it's available. It's out there. I'm very curious. I think a lot of the Waypoint 101 games that we do are we do our best to find 7 out of 10 games because we think they're interesting, and this seems like it's one of those. So again, we'll see how that all shakes out, but I'm really excited to check it out because I'm really curious what that team is up to, and because it's a game that I never played, and I've heard some things about the ending. I don't think we'll necessarily get there. As always, the goal is to put about 10 hours into the game at least, and if you want to put more in, put more in. But we'll make sure that there is a thread up on the forums, and then you can put questions there. Or you, again, you can send them to gamingadvice.com. All right. And what do we say to them, Danielle?
Be good and be good at it.
Peace.
Hey, folks, I'm Mark Maron from the WTF podcast, and this episode is brought to you by Kleenex Ultra Soft Tissues, your ally to help tackle your allergy symptoms this season. I love the change of seasons, but nobody loves pollen and all those other things floating in the air that make you sneeze during this nice weather. Kleenex Ultra Soft Tissues are hypoallergenic and allergist approved. So fight back against watery eyes and runny noses without worrying about irritating your skin. For this allergy season, grab Kleenex and face allergies head on.